It's a summer night in Shishmaref, Alaska, and the kids are on the loose.
How are you, Walter?
Good.
How's your day?
My day is good. How's your day, sir?
Good.
What are you guys playing?
We're just playing around.
This is Walter Nyakpuk. He's 8 years old.
What's wrong?
Right here on my ribs hurts. I ran too much.
Shishmaref is a small town on a barrier island just shy of the Arctic Circle. About 600 people live here. There's a church, a school, two stores, and around 150 houses. This island is tiny, and kids here are pretty free to roam. Tonight, they seem to have spontaneously gathered in a wide spot between some houses to chase each other around in the sand.
What's your favorite thing about living in Shishmaref?
It's fun.
Why is it fun?
Because there's a lot of kids.
There are a lot of kids. There's so many kids.
And we can be free.
And you can be free. Yeah.
From Walter's point of view, Shishmaref is a kind of paradise. But the paradox of this place is that it might be one of the safest and one of the most dangerous places to live in America today, because this small community is ground zero for climate change in the Arctic. Shishmaref is just north of the Bering Strait. It's the only town on Sarachev Island, and everywhere you go, you can see the waves and hear the constant roar of the ocean. The island is only about a quarter mile wide, and it's getting smaller.
It's changed a lot.
This is Kate Kokyak. She grew up in Shishmaref and now teaches kindergarten here. And she says in decades past, the sea ice served as a kind of buffer for the island, protecting it from the wind and waves when winter storms blew in.
It was always frozen, like the end of October. It no longer is.
These days, the ice is forming later and later, and waves that used to break far away from shore now slam directly into the island. And at the same time, the permafrost is thawing, weakening the foundation beneath the town. The combined effect is a quickly receding coastline.
We did lose a lot of land. Like where the seawall is now, that's where we used to have our playground. So all of that is gone.
Kate has lots of memories of places that are now underwater.
Well, if you go down like that way, that's where like 10 to 15 houses were. And like the last house that's there now, there was a house next to it, a road, and then another house. If you actually like visualize that, you can see how much land was lost there.
Shishmaref lost a lot of land in a storm in 1997 and then again in 2005. People gathered in the windy darkness to get the residents out and save as many of their belongings as possible. After that 2005 storm, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers built a new, stronger seawall.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the seawall, probably more would have been taken away. And had they not moved the houses, they probably would have just fallen in.
But the seawall is just a small and temporary fix. Without the barrier of the ice, eventually the ocean is going to wash this island away. The people of Shishmaref know they're not safe here, and 2 years ago, they voted to move the village to the mainland. In fact, the community has actually voted to relocate three times, in 2016, in 2002, and way back in 1973. People in Shishmaref were worried about erosion even then, but at that time, no one knew how much climate change would accelerate the erosion process. According to one study, between 2003 and 2014, Sarachev Island lost an average of 7.5 feet of land to erosion each year. And when major storms blow in, the residents have nowhere to run. Shishmaref is not connected to any roads, and in a raging storm, planes or boats would have a very hard time getting here. As the island shrinks and the sea ice recedes, the risks steadily rise.
Any one of these monster storms could come spinning in off the Bering Sea and overwash a village.
This is Joel Clement. He's a scientist and policy analyst who used to work at the U.S. Department of the Interior.
They don't have any way to get out of harm's way right now. So they're in a tough spot in the fall with the storm season. The storm season is expanding. That's the top-level thing I worry about.
Clement was one of the people leading the federal government's effort to help Shishmaref and other coastal Alaskan communities under the Obama administration. When he was hired in 2010, the federal government had already issued two reports describing the threat to these villages in no uncertain terms.
And that said, you know, these 30-plus villages are in trouble and are going to need some attention.
These reports said the communities were in, quote, imminent danger, and Shishmaref was one of the places on the top of the list. Now, at this point, you might be asking yourself, why is Shishmaref in such a precarious spot to begin with?
I've heard something to the effect of these dumb Eskimos. Why did they build their community on a barrier island?
This is Kelly Enningwalk.
The fact of the matter is because the church and the Bureau of Indian Affairs school was built.
Enningwalk heads the Inuit Circumpolar Council in Alaska, based in Anchorage, but she grew up in Shishmaref, and she says until 100 years or so ago, there was no permanent village on Sarachef Island. Her ancestors lived all along this part of the coast, and they used the island frequently, but they didn't live here year-round.
And that's the thing, they were kind of semi-nomadic. We didn't have permanent settlements and that sort of thing.
But all of that changed in the early 1900s, when the U.S. government and the Lutheran Church came to coastal Alaska and built churches and schools. It was an extension of the colonization process that had already swept through the lower 48 states. Alaska Native people were told they had to send their kids to the new schools or risk having them taken away. Over time, the population of this part of the coast concentrated on Sarachef Island. So this thing called development committed these people to a spot which turns out to be directly in harm's way.
Worst case scenario, of course, is a storm comes in and forces them off that land this year.
That's Joel Clement again. At the Interior Department, he set out to get federal agencies to help protect people in coastal Alaska from the threats of rapid climate change. Shishmaref and other towns were already engaged in planning their own solutions, but the sticking point was money. Moving a whole town is a complicated and expensive affair. One federal study pegged the cost of moving Shishmaref at $179 million. And Shishmaref doesn't have that kind of money. They don't have any kind of money, actually. 40% of people live below the poverty line. Many homes don't have running water. But Congress was not supportive of helping them make the move. Many members weren't, and still aren't, willing to accept that human-caused climate change is even real.
So finding dollars was very difficult. We did manage to get some grant money and some grant programs spun up. But boy, it's just embarrassingly difficult to find those dollars within the federal government.
In 2016, right before leaving office, President Obama signed an executive order protecting marine resources in the Bering Sea and setting up a new structure for helping Arctic communities respond to climate change. Clement was optimistic that it would finally bring meaningful action for Shishmaref, and he thought it would stand up under the new Trump administration.
Frankly, despite all the anti-climate change rhetoric out of these new folks, I wasn't worried about climate change adaptation because, you're addressing issues that are very clear in front of you. People are being directly impacted by climate change. It's not a model. It's not a theory. It's fact. And, of course, I was being very naive.
Less than 4 months into the new administration, President Trump revoked Obama's executive order. The project was dead.
It was a clear shot across the bow that, hey, it doesn't matter whether you're working on reducing greenhouse gas emissions or protecting people in peril. Anything that has a whiff of climate change to it has to stop.
Then, a few months later, Clement got reassigned to a totally unrelated job for which he had no qualifications. And he wasn't alone.
When I found out that dozens more senior executives like me had been reassigned, I realized that I was part of a purge.
Clement found a lawyer and filed a whistleblower complaint, which is still pending. He also wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post and started speaking publicly about what's at stake. Not just his and his colleagues' jobs, but the people of many coastal Alaskan communities.
I mean, government should be scrambling to try and find ways and dollars to get people out of harm's way and find innovative ways to do that. It's what government does, and that's what's appalling about this.
What would you say to people who are like, well, it's your problem. Why should the state of Alaska or the federal government or anyone else help you? If you need $200 million to move, go find $200 million and good luck to you.
Yeah, well, they'll be saying the same thing to Miami pretty soon, right? So, I mean, what happens up there in the face of climate change is an important bellwether for what's going to happen in the rest of the coastal areas of the United States, right? I mean, we are all American citizens and we have some expectation that we're not on our own, right? And that's one of the things that makes this country great.
I reached out twice to the Department of the Interior for comment, but they did not respond. So, given how tenuous the situation is, why don't people just leave Shishmaref? Like, if they can't relocate the whole village, why don't the residents just go somewhere else? Nome or Fairbanks or Seattle?
That's cultural death to these communities. Each one of these villages is its own distinct culture, their own distinct dialect. To ask them to just assimilate into another village somewhere is to ask them to let go of their culture entirely, which I think is just a horrible thought.
Everyone I met in Shishmaref seemed to agree on this. They want to stay together. People here depend on subsistence hunting to feed their families, and that food is shared with elders and others who can't go out and hunt. In fact, people in Shishmaref rely on each other for all of the essentials of life. They visit each other when they're sick, they take care of each other's kids, and they know that their future depends on keeping those relationships intact.
A lot of us like to take care of our community first and then ourselves last, you know. That's the way I feel.
This is Stanley Toktu, the vice mayor of Shishmaref.
And this is where our community is, you know. It comes like from family ties. Like this community is like a real big family.
Stanley's on the search and rescue team here, and he knows better than anyone just how bad things could soon get. He is frustrated by the indifference in Washington.
Yeah. I can't believe that our president don't believe in climate change, you know. Look at our lifestyle. Look at our erosion problems, you know.
Shishmaref is a case study in how climate change can't be understood in isolation from history and politics. This community is where it is in large part because outside institutions wanted to exert control over these people and their way of life. The United States government was very effective when it wanted to make people settle in this particular place, but it's so far proven completely ineffective in helping them to get out now that it's clear they need to relocate.
We're Americans too, you know, we don't have to be treated like a third world country.
Joel Clement says that we're likely to lose at least one coastal Alaskan village within the next 10 years. It could be Shishmaref. And it doesn't take much imagination at all to picture it. The winds wailing, the waves rising, and the frigid water rolling and crashing over this island on a dark winter night. It's a nightmare scenario, and it's completely possible. That's why Stanley Toktu says they need to relocate, and they need to do it together.
We're not trying to make a new home for myself. We're trying to build these things for them so they could have a home and do the subsistence lifestyle we have, you know.
On summer nights in the far north, the sun never really sets, and the kids of Shishmaref are taking full advantage of the endless twilight. 8-year-old Walter Nyakpuk takes a break from the swirling kid mosh pit to catch his breath and ponder the universal rituals of childhood.
The girls are supposed to be chasing us.
Why are the girls supposed to be chasing the boys?
Because they like them.
These kids show no signs of getting tired, but I'm ready for bed. And as I walk away, the sounds of their pop-up playground are quickly drowned out by the roar of the sea. So about 50 yards from where the kids are playing, maybe 100 steps, 200 steps, we hit the ocean. One of the climate change buzzwords right now is resilience. The people of Shishmaref are experts in it. They've been practicing it for a long, long time. And what they're asking for is basically the right to keep practicing resilience. They just call it by a different name, taking care of each other. For The World, I'm Amy Martin, Shishmaref, Alaska.